Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is Missionary Family Week here on Worldwide KFUO. So excited to share stories from our missionaries serving the Lord all over the world. Today we head to Lima, Peru. I'm excited about sharing our missionary family there with you. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family so we can share wonderful stories like this. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Joining us via Skype today, live, we're talking with the Hosh family in Peru, the Reverend Eddie and Melissa. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us today. And I have the privilege of getting to see you all on camera on Skype today. And thanks so much for sharing with us. Sorry, we don't have a camera in studio for you to see us here, but that's okay. I have a face for radio. Well, glad to have a chance to connect with you all today. Can't wait to share your story with our listeners. And it's just a joy to get to talk with our missionaries. Thanks be to God for the technology that we get to do that. Tell us a little bit about, am I saying it right? Is the Hosh family, is that right?
Yes, yes, that's correct.
Now, tell me a little bit about the history of the Hosh family, how you all met. Who wants to start with that?
I guess I'll start. We met back in around 2000-2001 at Pittsburgh State University, a state college in southeast Kansas. We were both studying different things. He was doing teaching and secondary education, and I was graphic design. Married in 2003. We actually came to Lutheran Church in 2005, right before the birth of our first daughter, our first child, Alexandria. And from there, seminary. Eddie went to seminary in 2007. Trying to remember the date, 2007, and kind of had a lot of ventures since then. And our son was born in 2008, Joseph.
So a growing family as well. Thanks be to God for the Hoshes. Now, you mentioned, Melissa, that you studied graphic design. Is that right?
Yes.
What were you hoping to do? Had you ever thought about being a missionary before?
No, that was kind of a, if you would have asked, either one of us, probably when we were married or even in college back in Kansas, missionary life or even, pastoral family, I probably would have laughed. It wasn't anything that, ever really considered, at least on my plate. I think we both had adventurous spirits, but, yeah, it was an interesting journey to get us from where we started to where we are now.
From Kansas, now in Lima, Peru. Now, Eddie, tell us a little bit about your background when ministry started becoming even a possibility that you started thinking about.
I think for me, it's a little bit of a different track. Growing up as a kid, I had my mother's dad, always would look at me even when I was real little and say, "You're going to be a missionary someday. You're going to be a missionary." And my response was no. I've come to learn two things: always respect the word of God and always respect the word of your grandparents. He called it, pretty much. So it's always, I think, been in the back of my mind, the idea of serving as a missionary and then going off to the ministry after I taught high school for 3 years in South Central Kansas. And then going off to seminary after that, it was always, I think, kind of something that was there. But without the support of Melissa, it was never anything that I would have done. When she was like, "Hey, sure, let's try it," we tried it, and this is what happened.
And so studying in seminary, when you were in seminary, were you thinking more parish pastor or thinking potentially missionary serving abroad?
You know, I don't think there was really for me a specific plan for that. I mean, parish pastor would have been interesting, but I think for me, I was always kind of coming up home from class. You know, we talked about this missionary today, or I talked to the real fun time was when I neglected to mention, but I visited with the missionary recruitment person my third or fourth year, or my fourth year of SEM. And I came home and told her, and she was not thrilled that I had done that without first discussing.
Always discuss those things with your wife. That's right.
But I don't know that if for me, there's ever really, you know, a parish pastor versus international missions. I've always been very much interested in missions and the idea and the possibility of what it can lead to and what it can mean.
So when did you first then think, okay, serving as a missionary could be a reality for us? When did that really start to sink in for you all?
Probably about 2 years ago is about when it started. Talking to some friends of mine, I have a good friend, Pastor Adam Lehman. He's currently in Spain. A good friend, Pastor Josh Gale, who is actually here in Lima with where we are. Both were in the mission field and or working towards and visiting with them, and made it kind of, I guess, lit the fire, I guess, so to speak, again. And then going from there, obviously the first step was talking with Melissa, praying to God that this is the direction that you want us to go. And it really felt like this was the direction that God was leading us. Melissa was on board. And so we started the process with the OIM office there in St. Louis and proceeded out from there. We figured we'd throw it in the God's hands, and where we end up is where we end up.
And where were you at the time that all this was happening?
I was an associate pastor at Faith Lutheran Church in Cherubusco, Indiana.
Turtletown, USA.
Just outside Fort Wayne, yeah.
So now you've made the transition from Turtletown, USA to Lima, Peru. Let's talk about making that transition. So you spent some time preparing to make this transition to life in Peru. Tell us about that.
Well, transition was very interesting. It's not something you put on a brochure when you're when you're starting the missionary process. Takes a lot of paperwork, a lot of interviews, and then a lot of kind of saying goodbye to a life you were pretty comfortable with. I mean, I was working in a school at the time. I said he had a pretty good career with, like I said, being associate pastor with potential for a future there in Cherubusco. So it was definitely a hard transition. We had just bought a house, kind of what we maybe were in it for a year when we considered missionary work. The kids really enjoyed their school. So it was packing up, getting rid of like all of our possessions, kind of minimalizing, and getting to where it was just us and maybe a few suitcases. So it was definitely an interesting road to go down for the year or so that we were planning and preparing and mentally and spiritually and, you know, physically getting ourselves ready to the point where, we could be on the mission field.
Now, you also, I'm sure, spent some time gathering network support as well, correct?
Yeah, that was a big part of it, too, was traveling the country. We were in several locations, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, building up support, which was really actually, for me, a lot of fun. I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy talking with people. And so it was a really neat opportunity to meet several other Lutherans around the country that had a real heart and a real passion for not only ministry, but for mission work. And it was neat to see from very, very small rural congregations to some pretty good sized, you know, larger congregations, a heart to serve and a heart to support missions and ministry.
During this process of preparation, how did you prepare the kids for the transition?
A lot of discussions. We made them aware the whole time that we were very much in open with the planning through the whole process. They were very much a part of the process, knowing what was going on, knowing what next step was going to be, knowing if they had any questions they could ask us. We actually connected them with over Skype with some of other missionary families and their kids. And so they could talk to them and actually get an account of what it's like from another kid that's kind of, you know, they're their own age that has already gone through it. And just constantly being and reminding them that that this is, you know, the Lord's calling, where we're serving the Lord and getting them My youngest, my son, has transitioned fairly quickly and fairly well. But he's just did turn 8. He's much, you know, he's at a much younger. My oldest, my daughter, just turned 11. So it was a little bit more of a challenge for her because it was the leaving behind friends. But she's made a lot of really good friends here. She's made some good connections here. And that's helped them transition is having, once you get past the language, then it's or work with the language is getting those new friends and those new contacts.
Were there any activities or anything you did in advance to prepare for that transition to a new culture, new language and things like that? Anything that you were able to do on the ground here in the U.S. before making that transition?
I know we tried to kind of do some early language learning for them as much as you can beforehand. It's kind of hard to get kids prepared, at least language wise, beforehand for the mission field. They're such learners that learn best when they can be immersed in it on a day to day basis. I know for us with them, constantly reminding them that we were going to support them, that they were going to have a support field just like we did, like I said, with other missionary kids, showing them that they weren't alone, that they that there are so many kids around the world. Especially, I think, hit home with them when we went to missionary retreat in August. It's something we do every year. I know that's worldwide, but especially the Latin America region, we have a week-long retreat where we get together with all of the Latin American missionaries and their families, and just the beauty of seeing all those mission kids and knowing that they are not alone in this, that there are other kids who are going through the exact same thing. I don't know if it's something you can ever completely prepare a child for. It's difficult. I mean, for them to see past like the day that they're in and know that it's going to be a completely different environment.
Let's talk about making that move. Well, before we talk about making that move to Peru, what did the rest of your families think as you shared with them?
Let's just say after the initial shock wore off and everyone started speaking with us again, I think that was the hardest. It was hardest for our families. Because it's just my brother and I. And I have the only grandchildren. So I take the only grandchildren for my mom and dad and move them to another part of the world. So you can only imagine how that would go. Mm. I think with Melissa's family also, I mean, once kind of the initial shock wore off of what are you doing? Why are you doing it? Are you crazy? You know, simple questions.
How did
like
you
that.
Respond to that question?
They've since have become very supportive. They are very supportive of our work, of the work we're doing here. They realize that it's not just us on some wild hair. Like, this really is where the Lord's called us to go. And so at first they were kind of before, and they're still not 100% behind it. We're still asked fairly regularly when we're moving back. but they are much more supportive, I think, over the long term than they were.
Any plans for family to visit?
My mother-in-law is planning on visiting, I think, in about a little over a year. and that's the only one we've heard for sure. Just as far as that, my brother might visit at some point. He lives in Indianapolis. Him and his wife live there in Indianapolis. But I'm not sure if not specific plans right now.
All right. Let's talk about making that move from the United States, from Churubusco, Indiana, to you're in Lima, Peru, correct?
Right.
All right. How did that go, making that move?
It was interesting. And we didn't transition straight here. Part of what the Latin American region does is new missionaries transition to the Dominican Republic first. That's where our regional office is located. That's where there's extra. And so we transition there, and there we start language training. There is a very well-established mission team there. Pastor Ted Cray, who's our regional director, Crystal Nuendorf, a deaconess there, several other pastors, several other deaconesses and lay people who are there. And so there's an established team. And so you come there, you start learning from them how to work in the mission field. So you're not just thrown out on your own, like in your new area right away. So we actually spent about 2.5 months in the Dominican Republic with the team there. And then we left for there in January. And then it was mid-March?
April.
So I guess 3 months in DR. So we were in April. We moved from there to Lima. So the move was it was broken up in that way, in that it kind of was more of an easing, as much of an easing in as you can. There are still really weird things to adjust to, just culturally as well as even, you know, other aspects. It's always different from country to country. But it was definitely, for us, I thought, an easier transition because we weren't just sent straight to Lima on our own. Okay, now figure it out. We were able to go through the DR and build on the support that we have there.
Ask questions and get orientated to Latin America.
Melissa, what was orientation like for you and the kids in the Dominican?
We go through the exact same things that the guys go through. The kids have a separate they do a separate orientation that's more talking about different regions and why the different regions are different, and they get to meet other kids whose parents also serve in the Latin American region. I know my daughter and son made some really good friends that they still will talk about, like, well, I wonder what, you know, so-and-so is doing and how are they like their new country. For the wives, I said, we go through the exact same training. I think it's very important for the wives and husbands to be able to have the same experiences, to understand what each other are going to go through on the field. We have very different roles, but a lot of the things, the culture shock, the studying of like importance of being together as family, studying the word together, being able to go out and do things. And these are all things we study in orientation, is basically how to be a missionary, not only just how to be a missionary on the field, but how to be a family on the field, because you are going to face a lot of those challenges.
How long have you now been in Lima?
We have been here since April, about the middle of April.
Five, maybe 6 months.
Right at about 5-6 months.
So still fairly new to the neighborhood, new to the culture. All right, it's time to share some of those stories from those first few weeks, first few months in Lima, and learning about the culture. That's okay. You can share the funny ones that are secrets, and no one will tell.
No one will ever know.
No, tell us about meeting your new neighbors and moving in the neighborhood there. What was that like? How have you met the neighbors?
Yes, we have met the neighbors. We have a unique situation in that the apartment, that there's already a team here. There are already two pastors here and a deaconess already serving here in Peru, in Lima specifically. So that helped too. So there was already people here on the ground. Meeting our neighbors is definitely different, but the apartment that we live in, was the apartment of a missionary family that used to serve here, and they took a call last December. And so the people in our apartment, we're in an apartment, and the people in the building are used to, Americans being in this particular apartment. It's definitely a challenge when people for greetings, for example, with guys, it's usually there's a handshake involved, but 9 times out of 10 with, for introducing their meeting a young woman or a woman, it's the kiss on the cheek. Mm-hmm. And when you're an American and you like your space, that's a little odd at first. but it was definitely a little bit of an adjustment. My son absolutely still has problems with that. He still when we try to, this is what you need to do. We're still working on that with him.
greet one another with a holy kiss, right?
Exactly. But it's been unique. It's been, we're in a very different area. The big thing with Peru, if you look up a lot of stuff with Peru, is everyone here loves food. Lima, Peru is kind of becoming a foodie capital. People from all over come to Lima for the food.
Really?
It's really, really, really good food. And so one of the first questions they ask when you come here and they find out that you're not, obviously we don't look like we're from here. And it's, where are you from? So we say they're from the United States. Oh, Florida, because they all know Florida. And we say no, Kansas, and then they don't know that one usually. But, and then the following question is, do you like the food? Mm-hmm. And yes. And then what's your favorite? But the food is very much the key part of it. Which is great because I love to eat food. So it works out very, very well. But yeah, just little things that you don't, that stuff like that, that's been very, very different for me to adjust with.
I know both of our biggest challenges is language. When you go to classes for language, it seems a lot easier in class practice as opposed to practice in real life. you get a lot of confidence going, wow, I got this. This is great. And then you realize, you know, they don't talk in slow speed. They talk just like us, you know, fast and million miles per hour. And there's a slang and things that you just can't quite grasp when you're confronted with your people and the church on the street. And it does make it a little more difficult to make those friends, to go to the market, to do the simple things that you kind of take for granted in the States. You're going, well, I'm just going to go here and do this. And it takes a lot more steps and thought process and planning out to get yourself to the point where, okay, I can go do this. And I know the steps and I know the process. We've especially seen that in the school with the kids. I think there's a lot of expectation that that you should automatically know the process and procedure that their schools have here. And we've got caught a few times of not following the procedure just because we honestly don't know what they are and we don't always know the expectations. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge.
So you find yourself in a need to rally just to go to the market to get some groceries.
Exactly.
I got to prepare myself mentally.
Run down to the store and go grab a gallon of milk or go grab whatever. But here, yeah, there's definitely more of a process here.
So you find yourself reviewing your language lesson before you go to the store to ask for milk, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. You formulate in your head, okay, what's the question I can ask that they'll know what I'm looking for? And then you do great until they ask you a question back and you haven't practiced that one yet.
So have you come up with do you have a common phrase to explain that you're new to the language, new to the culture when it's clear you don't understand what's being spoken?
Not necessarily a common phrase. It's more of just a look of confusion. You know, just kind of say, and you might catch bits and pieces, but you'll kind of look at them and go, como, which is kind of like, what?
Sure. Como, and then the body language.
Exactly. The body language tells a lot of story. It's great.
Absolutely. Well, we have more to learn about the Hosh family when we come back from our break. They're serving the Lord in Peru. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
For months, you've been hearing how the next president can impact the U.S. Supreme Court for decades to come. This is very true. The next president may fill three or possibly even four vacancies based upon the age of the current justices. But the Supreme Court is just the tip of the iceberg. When President Obama came to office, one of the appellate courts of 13 was controlled by pro-abortion judges. Thanks to him, they now control nine. That is 70%. Texas Supreme Court Justice Don Willett said the Supreme Court handles less than 100 cases each year, while the appellate courts deal with over 35,000. If we are to save the unborn and secure our religious liberties, we need a pro-life president who will make good court appointments.
Like us on Facebook at Life Issues and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
A charitable gift annuity is a smart and easy way to support your favorite radio ministry, KFUO. A gift annuity provides lifetime cash payments, immediate tax benefits, and a legacy gift to KFUO. Since gift annuity payout rates are based on age, this way of giving is attractive to listeners 65 years or older. If you have questions about gift annuities or would like to have a personal illustration of a gift annuity, call Mary at 314-996-1518. That's 314-996-1518.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
The annual Lutheran Prayer Breakfast, hosted by Lutheran Senior Services, will be held on Wednesday, October 12th at the Orlando Events and Conference Center in Maryland Heights. This year, learn about the poor people of God, for whom we pray. Deadline for registration and ticketing is October 5th. Angie Sutton has information on the Lutheran Prayer Breakfast at 314-262-8217 or email angie.sutton@lssliving.org.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is Missionary Family Week here on Worldwide KFUO on Faith and Family. We're talking with the Hosh family serving the Lord in Peru, the Reverend Eddie and Melissa Hosh. And before we went to break, we were talking about making that transition to life in Peru and talking about just the language difference and what you all were learning about your neighbors and the community and the school. When it comes to school for the kids and education options for the kids, what were some of your options that you considered and why did you make the choice that you did?
There were several choices. Because we live in Lima, there's a lot of schools. There's international schools, there's private schools, there's public schools, there's homeschooling. There's a variety of options, just like there would be in the States. And when we were in the Dominican Republic, we actually had these kids kind of visiting a school to help them transition in to school here. But the school that we ended up picking, we picked partly because it's a small school. Lexi's class has, I think, 6 kids. Joe's class has 12. That would help them with language because the entire school day is in Spanish. So they go in the morning at 8, school goes until about 4:30, 5 o'clock with school and then extra activities afterwards. And they're in Spanish all day long. So it's helped them to really help them with the language. They're sure. correcting Melissa and I now. That's how good they've gotten. That we mess up and they're like, you know, you said that wrong, right? Yes, Joe, thank you. Yes, Lexi, thank you. but there are a lot of abortions. The school we picked for size, also Pastor Gale and his wife, Amanda, have their two kids in the same school. So we thought that would help them also too, to have two kids who are also from the States, who are other missionary kids, to help them with that transition.
Well, certainly kids seem to learn languages faster than we as adults do sometimes. And yeah, they're not shy about correcting us either, are they?
That's very true.
Well, glad that the education choice has worked out well for you so far and that you have that support of another family there as well. Let's talk a little bit about the work of the mission in Peru. What you mentioned that there are other families who are serving there, other missionaries serving in Peru. Tell us a little bit about the history of Lutherans in Peru and the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod serving in Peru.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod first became involved about, I want to say a little under 10 years ago. There was an earthquake in Lunahuaná, which is a town about 3 hours south of Lima. And that's what first draw Lutheran mission or the LCMS here was the earthquake. And it was the Mercy Ministries that comes with that. There was a big focus in that area, Lunahuaná. And it's continued to be from there. In fact, Anthony DiLiberto, who is currently on his vicarage, I believe, was one of the early missionaries down there. Rachel Powell, who's in the Dominican Republic, as a deaconess, was there. Jamie DiLiberto, many, many different missionaries that were serving in the area. After a while, they decided to transition to the city of Lima. And with that, we have five mission sites currently here in Lima, Peru. The whole is La Misión Peru, and also Castilla Fuerte. Castilla Fuerte, which is an NGO, and that's who I actually more specifically work with. But total, there are currently five mission sites here. We have three pastors, one deaconess. We currently have a DCE intern who is here for another year and a half, give or take. Lord, maybe see about maybe having him here full time after that, if that's something he would consider. So it's a growing ministry. Our biggest ministry is into areas that are, they're called Pueblo Jovens, young towns. They're very, very, poor. And working with the families that are there, and the children that are there. The children are the big focus, especially with Castilla Fuerte.
Let's talk a little bit more about the needs and the culture, the life in Peru where this mission work is being done. What are some of the needs? You mentioned that there's quite a bit of poverty.
Poverty is a big the area that I work in Lima is actually a barrio called San Juan de Lurigancho. It's the largest, most heavily populated barrio in the city. There's over 1.1 million people that live in that area. The area that I work is actually up in the cerros or up in the low points of the mountains. There's a lot of running water. There's not a lot of electricity. That's the level that there's not a lot of those basic utilities. And so it's a lot of people who are trying to make it through with whatever they can, selling things that they make, jewelry, things like that. They're working for farmer, you know, people and stores of everything from when garlic is in season, they'll pay people to basically peel garlic all day, and they'll get a bucket of garlic and they'll peel on the garlic and then they'll take it back to wherever they got it, get another bucket. They get paid by the bucket. That's the kind of, they're just trying to find new ways to make ends meet, to provide for their families. That's the dominant part of the areas that the areas that I work in. One of the other areas, La Victoria, also a very poor area, but in a different completely different dynamic. We have a mission in Los Olivos, which is a congregation. We have five sites, and they're five very different and unique situations and areas that they're in. They all provide their unique challenges, but they all provide their unique blessings too.
So how do you find yourself spending your time, Pastor, serving these people and serving in this missionary or in this mission?
Right now, where I am, we have the Castilla Fuerte, which is Spanish for Mighty Fortress. And it's what we focus on right now is educational support for kids. We have in San Juan upwards of 100 kids that are enrolled in Castilla Fuerte right now. We see anywhere from 70 to 90 in a day. And that's ages ranging from 4 years old up through high school. And it's a lot of it is educational support. We offer different mathematics is on Thursdays, science is on Tuesdays. We have subjects that we help to kind of reinforce the schoolwork. With that includes chapel on a daily basis. It includes Bible class and Bible study on a daily basis. And that's what my main focus is in now. Lord willing, on the 4th of December of this year, we will be having our first divine service in San Juan de Lurigancho. So ultimately, the goal is to have the mercy outreach alongside altar and pulpit.
There hasn't been a strong presence of, as you said, divine service or that word and sacrament ministry there.
There has not been, no. There has not been a lot of presence of that in this area, not specifically. In that area there, no.
What has been the response of the people in the community as you bring this gift of God, the word of God, to them?
It's been a really neat response. The kids, it's really neat walking up the hill now. I've been going up there enough and getting to know the kids really to where the kids will see me and they'll all come running at you. And there's just something really cool when they're yelling, coming and running down the street, Pastor, Pastor, and they want to come tell you about their day. They want to tell you about whatever, because you've got that relationship. But through that, we're also making connections with their families, with their parents. And it's a lot of visitations. We're visiting a lot of these families. Usually we can get about two or three, maybe four visits in an afternoon, depending on the family and depending on how high up we have to hike, because I'm not nearly as in good a shape as I should be for hiking up mountains. There's a lot of that. It is, and the blessing, but it's been very, very, very positive. We've had a lot of very positive response. We actually, right now, we're going to be visiting with a couple of families, and we've identified seven children that have not been baptized, but their parents are interested in baptism for their children. And so we might be able to have a divine service here maybe in December, and with that include six or seven baptisms.
Wow. Thanks be to God. So,
yeah. Praise the Lord.
As you were in your pastoral formation at the seminary, did you ever think that hiking at high altitudes would be part of your vocation?
No, I did not. I think I might have missed that day of class. I don't know.
Well, you mentioned that there are some families that perhaps will bring their children for baptism. What, if any, exposure to the Word of God have these individuals had prior then to this mission work? You mentioned earlier there's really not much of a presence of Word and Sacrament in the community. Any exposure to the Word of God prior to this?
There might be some evangelical churches. And obviously the big thing is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church is all over the country. It is a very Catholic country as a whole. Historically, it has been since it became a country. So there is kind of an underlying understanding. A lot of them, they understand the basics of who God is, who Christ is his only son. And that, I mean, they have that basic, but their understanding there might be some background in that. I haven't really met anybody that just sits there and goes, they don't know something. So they're getting it from somewhere, but like I said, there's evangelical churches that are active. There actually is a Pentecostal church just down the hill, Cerro, from us. So there are some ministries that have been there. So there's at least seems to be a basic understanding, but still very much the pure gospel of Christ crucified and risen is for the forgiveness of sins for everyone is a blessing to them. And a lot of them, you can tell they're hearing it for that part of it for the very first time.
Well, thanks be to God that the word is being brought to them, that they may hear that saving message of Christ. Melissa, tell me about your work in the mission. I'm sure that you probably have a number of things going on at one time, just by assumption here.
The role of a missionary wife is an interesting one, because I think it kind of falls along the path of pastor's wife as well. That there's not really one set mold or one set purpose that a missionary wife has. Our biggest job on the mission field is a huge support network for the husbands on the field, just because they need so much of that. There's just so much stress and so much work that needs to be done. So I try a lot to be there for my husband, to be there for my family, to do what they need me to do on the field. Even it's something as simple as making sure the house is cleaned and the laundry's done, the dishes. And I know so many of us, like I said, take on different roles, whether it be being involved with different missionary wives groups. I know right now I started a online missionary wife's Bible study to try to kind of include as many missionary wives as I can and have that fellowship with them. And I think we are kind of working on that, just having more of that, because the role of missionary wife can be a very lonely one. You are alone a lot of the time because your spouse is so actively involved. And it just takes, I think, that much more than you can imagine, because not only are they doing their pastoral roles as they've done in the past, but include that with new cultural differences that they have to adapt to. Plus, writing sermons in another language is a very daunting task. You're looking 2 to 3 times as much work as they would normally do on a normal basis. Just because all the differences you have to adapt to. So the role as a wife, a lot of it just depends. Like for me, I'm still trying to find what my role is, and kind of slowly getting to the point where I can kind of understand what God wants me to do here in Peru to be the most helpful for my family.
You mentioned, an online Bible study. How do you think technology has made this transition go smoothly for you? What advantages does it present? What challenges might it present, having technology? I mean, just the fact that we can communicate today via Skype is, an obvious one. But how has technology made this go smoothly for you? What challenges might it present?
It's a wonderful tool in that... I sit there and think of years ago how, people wouldn't have been able on the mission field, wouldn't be able to communicate really effectively with their family and friends, with other missionaries. It does bring a greater support network just because you have access. Like, I have access here and my husband has access to other missionaries on the field that we can get advice from, and being able to visually see, via Skype, our family members and be able to communicate with them. It's never going to be the same as being right there, but it's such a blessing. But you said it can also be kind of hard too with technology, because I think it can be a crutch. Facebook, on television, all those things that you can pull you in instead of being in the Word, or being out there and communicating with the people. Cause sometimes it can be a scary place walking out your side your door as a missionary. Sometimes it's easier to kind of hold on to those things that are comforts, especially when the outside is so different and can be a little intimidating and frightening, all those new things.
So it's a tough balance, being able to use that technology to stay connected with family and have that support, but yet also knowing when to turn it off and get outside and go talk to the neighbors, go to the grocery store, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And there's a unique challenge to that, too, because we live in a city of 10 million people.
Wow.
Lima has, the population is right around 10 million people. And so it's, you know, it's not as easy to sit there, oh, we're just going to go to the park or we're going to go out and do this, because it's usually more of a process. You know, there you might get in your car and drive down the street, go to a park or go to the zoo or go to whatever. But we don't have a car. So it's a matter of finding the right bus lines and the right. And she goes back to technology being almost like a crutch, because you almost could sit there and go, well, I can go out and I can do all that and take all the, or I can just sit here and play on the internet. And it's a temptation I know that we both have fought with, and we both are actually, you know, and I know probably others have too, that have continued to struggle. Yeah, like you said, when to just shut it off and say, okay, we're going to go and do this and get out and do whatever we need to do.
I'm sure that it certainly can be a temptation. Now, you mentioned not having a car and using buses. Let's talk about transportation and getting around in the community. Just, you know, for example, the kids going to school, or you mentioned, you know, hiking in the mountains to go do your work as a missionary. Let's talk about getting around. How do you do that?
I should tell you the story that is my process to get to my mission site.
Very good.
I start at my house at, say, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, as an example. I hop, there's a train station about a block and a half away. I hop on the train. I'm on the train for about a half an hour, give or take, depending on stops and stuff. I then am off of the train. I walk to a corner to grab a bus, or what's called a colectivo, which is basically a minibus or a van. And it takes me, and I drive on there for about 10 or 15 minutes. So I get to the next, another corner. And then I hop out and I drive what's called a moto taxi, which is like a little three-wheeled rickshaw looking thing with a motorcycle front. I ride that up and then I walk. It takes me 45 to 50 minutes to get from my house, to 35 minutes to an hour to get to my house or get to the mission site from my house. And I think I hit about every mode of transportation on the way.
Did you use a boat?
Yeah. The transportation is different. Like I said, we don't own a car. We have really right now no plans of getting a car because there is so much public transportation. But it also provides unique challenges. If you have to go to the store and buy a new bed or a new couch or a new computer desk, it's, you have to order it online and have it delivered. And that's a whole different experience. Because you don't have a car, you can just go buy it, throw it in the back of the car and drive it home. Our kids, we have, they call it a bus. It's a van that comes and picks them up. The first time I rode in one of the buses here, it's called a Metropolitano, and it's a really heavily used bus. I have never felt so close to my neighbor as I did riding that bus. They literally pack you in there like a sardine. And you ride, and then you can hope that you can get out at the stop you need to get out at. I've missed my stop because I couldn't get out of the bus, out of a train before. I've overshot it by like two stops because I just can't get to the door. Just because of the sheer volume of people that use the public transportation. But it's definitely a blessing. It's neat to have as well.
Earlier you mentioned food, and this is one of my favorite parts of talking with our missionaries. You said that the, you know, the Peruvians are very proud of their food and always ask about it. They love the food. It's become a foodie culture in a sense. Let's talk about the food and some of the adventures you've had with food in Peru.
Like I said, the food here is very good. It has a very heavy Asian influence to a lot of it. To the food, the spices and stuff that they'll use. The most unique thing I think I've eaten was when I had ceviche, which is basically they take raw fish into cubes, they cut it up into chunks and they toss it in lime juice and then they give it to you and you just eat it raw.
It sounds delicious.
It's, you know,
I love ceviche.
It really actually is good. But it's definitely something that you have to adjust to when they put this plate in front of you and it's covered with a pile of raw fish. And my first question when I got it was, I asked if they forgot to cook it. Because I'm from Kansas and we fry everything. So why isn't there fried fish on my plate?
So it wasn't deep fried. That was a challenge.
No, it's not. It was not deep fried. I ate it. It was still pretty good, but it was definitely, but there's street vendors, street carts all over the place. And you can buy anything from chicken to liver to
cooey,
which is, we haven't had cooey yet. Cooey is one where it's a national food here. Melissa and the kids won't eat it because it's a pet. It's basically a guinea pig. They eat guinea pig here.
It has the teeth and all still on it. And then when they put on your plate, it has the head looking at you. I can't eat something that's looking at me.
So that one's going to take some time to adjust to.
Yeah, that one might take a little bit more time, but it's a lot of chicken. Beef is not big here at all. There's not a really big beef culture here. There is beef, but it's just not as big as it is like in the States. It's a lot leaner. There's fish is really big. Chicken.
What's a typical breakfast? What's a typical breakfast there?
Breakfast for Peruvians is usually, it would just be like a cup of coffee and some toast or bread. Breakfast is not a big meal here at all. In fact, you know, you go in the States, you go to International House of Pancakes or place, and they always have the really big breakfast. There's not a lot of places that are open for breakfast here. Breakfast is not the big meal. The big meal of the day is usually lunch, and it's about 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And that's the big, huge meal of the day where everyone comes. They come home from work, and they eat together as a family, and then they go back to work. So lunch is the big meal, and it's usually around 2 in the afternoon. And then dinner is usually anywhere from 7 to 8 at night.
And you talked about fish and chicken and meat and cooey, of course. what about desserts? Is dessert a big thing in Peru or not as much?
Not really. I mean, dessert in Peru is, I kind of compare it with, if you've ever gone to like a Chinese restaurant and you've gone to like the dessert section, it's a lot of that type of pastry, kind of more of the drier pastries, or gelatin. So not pastries like we would consider, even cakes, it has more of a dry texture. I mean, friends, you know, when you go to the bakeries and stuff, you look at what's on the shelf, they all look very delicious, but it's a cultural thing. And I imagine for the people here, it's very delicious. But for us, when we're so used to such a rich palate of desserts in the States, it does take, it's really hard to get used to, because you're like, oh, this is okay. they do have good gelatos though.
Well, I'm sure when we check back in a year or two and see how you've adapted, I'm sure that might, appeal differently.
It will all be different. And we're blessed too, because it is such a big city. There are a lot of restaurants here that are very popular in the United States. We have McDonald's. We have most any big chain restaurant you have here, which is both good and bad, because it's good because if you're just in a bind and you want to go grab something, you can go to McDonald's. It's also bad because if you're in a bind and you want to go grab something, your only choice is McDonald's. So we have blessings with that sort of stuff too. But the food here, like I said, that's their big, and they're very proud of their food, and it's very, very good food.
Well, we are unfortunately all out of time, and I know there's so much more to share. Thank you both for sharing with us about your life and service in Peru. It's been a pleasure talking with you today.
With you as well. God's blessings on your ministry there.
Thank you. God bless you. The Reverend Eddie and Melissa Hosh, serving the Lord in Peru. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO. On the air, online, and on demand.